is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
Welcome to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning here on KGMI. Well, our weekly commentary this week, we are going to focus on the Fed. Because the Fed met this week, which means investors and analysts are shifting through Wednesday's FOMC statement, updated economic projections, and the dot plots, and Powell's press conference searching for any signal, real or imagined, that what our central bank will do next. In particular, the market is on tenterhooks about when rate cuts will start, how fast those rate cuts will come, or if the Fed will simply hit the pause button in the prospect of rate cuts until deep into 24. We think this obsession with the Federal Reserve is unhealthy. Instead of an obsession with slight policy shifts out of Washington, D.C., we think investors need to be focused on more important matters, like the process of innovation, entrepreneurial risk-taking, and corporate profits. And in the end, it's these factors that will drive stock market valuations the most, not the vagaries of the short-term interest rates target by the mandarins of money. Things have changed a great deal since the Fed meeting on January 31st. Back then, the futures market expected 6 rate cuts of 25 basis points each this year, with the first one coming this month. But as of Friday's close, the market expected only 3 cuts this year, with the first one coming in either June or July. No wonder the shift in rate expectations given recent reports on inflation. The 2 CPI reports since then show consumer prices are up at a 4.6% annual rate in the first 2 months of this year. And no, this is not food and energy core prices, which exclude those two volatile categories, were also up at 4.6% annual rate so far this year. Even worse for the Fed is that the newly made up slice of CPI that the Fed and others call the super core measure of inflation, which includes services only, no goods, but also excludes food, energy, and housing rents, rose 0.8% in January and 0.5% or 0.5% in February. That's a growth rate of 8.2% annualized so far this year. You need to notice how we used to hear a lot about this measure a year or so ago when it was indicating lower inflation, and now few dare speak its name when it shows inflation is reaccelerating. Meanwhile, overall producer prices are up 5.4% so far this year, and core producer prices are up 4.5% annual rate. But none of these figures are remotely close to the 2% inflation goal that the Fed claims it's still targeting. The problem for the Fed is that there are signs that the economy is growing, maybe slowing. Although retail sales rose 0.6% in February, after factoring in downward revisions to prior months, retail sales rose a tepid 0.1%. And core sales, which exclude a volatile category such as autos, building materials, and gas stations, and is a crucial measure for estimating GDP, increased by 0.1% in February. But that was revised slightly lower for previous months, down to 0.5%. So if unchanged in March, these sales are going to be down at a 0.7% annual rate in the first quarter versus the fourth quarter, which would be the first quarterly decline since the COVID lockdown. Industrial production rose a tepid 0.1% in February, but that follows declines of 0.3% and 0.5% in December and January, respectively. We like to follow manufacturing output, excluding the auto sector, which is volatile, and that's down 0.9% from a year ago. Also not a good sign. As always, we watch the press conference following Wednesday's meeting for any mention of the Fed looking more closely at the money supply, but we wouldn't get our hopes up. The M2 measure of money is down 2% in the last year, which would not be good for the economy if these figures are accurate and if they continue. Another key issue is whether the Fed will publicly abandon its 2% target to make it easier for themselves to achieve their goal. We think that will happen eventually, but several years from now, not soon. The Fed likely thinks it'll lose credibility if it announced a higher target of inflation and could send longer-term interest rates spiraling upward. That's not a risk the Fed would take, particularly in an election year. Our advice to investors, listen to and watch the Fed, but don't obsess about it. The changes in monetary policy from meeting to meeting don't matter nearly as much as the productive capacity of the American people. And let's look at our global wrap-up. We're seeing that the Fed is turning dovish and the Bank of Japan is doing its rate hikes. Global equities were positive on the week in response to dovish pivots in many global central banks. The yield on the U.S. 10-year Treasury note declined 9 basis points. That would be 0.9% to 4.21%, while the price of a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude oil was little changed. And volatility as measured by the CBOE Volatility Index, or VIX, declined to 12.9 from 14.5 last Friday. And as we mentioned a minute ago, the Bank of Japan is ending its negative interest rate policy. For the first time in 17 years, the Bank of Japan raised interest rates to a range of 0 to 0.1%, making it the last central bank to end its negative interest rate policy, which has been in place since 2016. Additionally, the Bank of Japan eased its yield curve control and purchase of risky assets meant to stimulate an economy that had been deflationary for some time. The move was expected as it came on the back of inflation running above target for over a year, as well as strong wage data. And as we mentioned, the Fed is now confirming 3 rate cuts in this year. They held their benchmark federal rate steady at their range of 5.25 to 5.5 at their meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee, but was reiterated that it still expects a cumulative 0.75% in rate cuts this year. This stance on cuts was perceived as dovish by the market, as both the GDP and core inflation estimates were revised up for the year. So despite the 3 25 basis point cuts envisioned for this year, longer-term dot plot projections indicated a slower pace of cuts moving forward, as Fed Chairwoman Jerome Powell said that the path back to 2% inflation is likely to be bumpy. The Fed made no decisions on the balance sheets. However, it communicated that it is likely to slow the pace of balance sheet runoff soon. And we saw U.S. housing starts and existing home sales outperform. U.S. housing starts and existing home sales rose to their highest levels since May of 22 and February of 20, respectively, beating estimates. The resale market, which has been seeing inventory level plummet as mortgage rates have remained high, also saw contract closings increase 9.5% month over month, while residential starts increased 10.7%. The expectation of declining mortgage rates, which had been high for some time, helped fuel the jump in listings of existing home sales. Despite this, home builders have continued to benefit from the overall lack of existing home inventory. And we're seeing that the U.S. PMIs indicate economic growth is still strong. So the Flash Composite Purchasing Managers Index came in at 52.2 in February. Typically, a reading above 50 indicates expansion in the private sector, while one below 50 indicates contraction. The strong showing was driven by a combined improvement in manufacturing PMIs, which came in at 52.5 above estimates. Service PMIs registered at 51.7, which were below the prior reading, but still in expansion territory. In Europe, Germany, France, and the United Kingdom, manufacturing PMIs stayed below 50, although the United Kingdom saw an improvement in business activity. And take a quick hit here. The Swiss National Bank became the first developed market central bank to begin its cutting cycle, reducing its target rate by a quarter to 1.5%. The Bank of England held its benchmark interest rate steady at 5.25%. However, the Monetary Policy Committee tilted more dovishly as board committee members withdrew their support for additional rate hikes. And we saw U.S. jobless claims decline by 2,000 from previous readings, remain near their historic low levels. Continuing claims were a little change, indicating a still strong labor market. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up. We'll be right back.
We hear a lot about high interest rates these days, but if you're interested in a more comfortable home and don't want to pay any interest, West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical should get your interest. Hi, I'm Joe Tien. Let me explain. Warm weather is right around the corner, and if you've been thinking about adding air conditioning to your home, now is the time to act. If you don't have AC and your current system is on its last legs, you can save $3,600 on a new system right now. If you're happy with your current system and you just want to add AC, West Mechanical's pros can get you up and running for as little as $140 per month, a great price for the ultimate in comfort, and they offer 0% interest. That's right, 0% interest, and always with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. And don't forget about a system tune-up. Experts now say twice a year is ideal to keep your equipment running right. Get to know West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical today at westmechanical.net. That's westmechanical.net.
This is Heidi Person, General Manager of the Cascade Radio Group, with a look at some good news in our community that we like to call the upside.
In 2023, Terramar Brew Distillery and Edison raised $8,700 for local community organizations and charities through beer pint nights, donations, and their Barker's Dozen monthly dog biscuit fundraiser. They currently have two fundraiser beers on tap in 2024, including the Kakua Project IPA, brewed by many breweries across the country to help raise funds for the Maui fire relief efforts. They also brew the Ales for ALS West Coast IPA, with proceeds benefiting ALS research. Terramar Brew Distillery also hosts different local artists throughout the year with the local Artist of the Month series. The Upside is brought to you by RB Wick and the Bellingham Coin Shop. Be sure to join RB Wick for the 7th annual Easter egg hunt throughout Whatcom County with prizes up to $2,500. Visit RB Wick's Treasure Hunts on Facebook for more info.
If you have good news to report, email it to us at theupside@cascaderadiogroup.com.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning here on KGMI. And as I announced yesterday's show, I've got my Mariners tickets and my parking pass available this year again for my clients and some of our listeners. And I do have a couple of games here early in the season. I had three, and now I have two. One is next Saturday night, which would be the 29th of March, and that is the game against the Boston Red Sox. It starts at 6:40 p.m. I have my four tickets and a parking pass. The second one would be on Wednesday of the first week of April, the 3rd of April. And that one game starts at 1:10 in the afternoon against Cleveland. Now, Saturday night tickets and those daytime games are highly desirable. If you're interested, give me a call, 360-733-1200. And let's see here. We are Asset Advisors. We are located out on the Pacific Highway in the Pacific Commerce Center next to Wilson's Furniture. Our address is 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. Check out our website, wealthwakeup.com. Incidentally, you can click on podcasts there, and you can see podcasts of these shows in case you missed one and you're interested. So that's wealthwakeup.com. Click on podcasts. Had some discussion clients were having trouble finding some of our past shows. KGMI.com website has changed. And if you click on their new website and you go under KGMI and click down, you'll see the podcast list there. MyBellinghamNow.com is the new KGMI website. Or you can click on ours, WealthWakeUp.com, and click on podcasts up at the top of the screen. Okay, continuing on with our global roundup for the week, we saw Japan's headline core CPI measures are a year-over-year rate of 2.8%. Market participants were expecting further monetary policy tightening later this year, although the range of terminal rate levels is still low and narrow. And in New Zealand, unexpectedly entered a technical recession in the final quarter of 23, with GDP declining a 0.1% following a 0.3% decline in the third quarter. High interest rates have driven down consumer spending, and investment in the Royal Bank of New Zealand has also held its cash rate at 5.5% for nearly a year, and last month indicated it does not intend to lower rates until next year. And the Royal Bank of Australia held its cash rate at 4.35%, also removed any references to further rate hikes. Australian unemployment declined 3.7% as the labor market and economy continue to show resilience in the face of more restrictive monetary policy. And the Hong Kong-listed Chinese stocks declined by their most in nearly 2 months as weak earnings and a declining yuan dampened investor sentiment. We saw Canada's CPI came in at less than expected 2.8% year over year, increasing investor expectations in a June rate cut. And Turkey raised its one-week repo rate 500 basis points, that would be a 5%, to 50% ahead of its local elections. The country hopes to support its currency, which has sold off amid inflation by over 70%. Let's take a look at the February housing report that came out this week. A little detail here, and it was basically good news all around on home building in February, although some one-off factors probably juiced the report. Home building surged back in February after dropping in January, crushing consensus expectations, while previous month's activity was revised higher as well. Home completions also soared, rising 19.7% to 1.729 million annual rate. That's the highest level since the beginning of 2007. Meanwhile, building permits rose a solid 1.9% and beat consensus expectations. It is important to note that a couple of one-off factors that could be influencing this blowout report. First, February included leap day, meaning that builders have one more day than usual. If this was not accounted for in this seasonal adjustment, and it looks like it wasn't, then it would also have made activity look stronger than it really was. Second, the weather was milder in February versus normal temperatures, which likely helped activity. And while the data has been very choppy of late, it appears developers have finally found their footing in what has been a challenging environment for sales. Case in point, housing starts are up 16.6% from the bottom of last August. And that said, we're still below December's level at a 15.6% off the peak as of April of 22. That said, they still are below December's level at 15.6% off the peak of April of 22, the month after the Fed began their current tightening cycle. Another recent theme is a split between single home and multifamily development. In the past year, the number of single family starts are up 35.2%. Multifamily starts are down 34.8%. Permits for single family homes are up 29.5%, while multi-unit permits are down 29%. This huge gap in data is due to the unprecedented nature of the last 4 years since COVID began. The 30-year mortgage rates are still hovering near their multi-decade highs, and mortgage lock-in phenomenon of homeowners is real, which is limiting the supply of homes on the market. It's also forcing homebuyers to look at new builds as their best option. This is why news that the report for homebuyers was that fresh supply is on its way, as new home completions rose to their fastest level since 2007. And while we don't see housing as a major driver of economic growth in the near term, we don't expect a housing bust like we had in the 2000s that's on the way either. As the Fed eventually begins the rate cuts, mortgage rates should trend lower as well, helping support housing later in 2024. In another housing news, the NAHB Housing Index, which is a measure of home builder sentiment, rose to 51 in March from 48 in February. This is the fourth gain in a row and the first time that the index has been above 50 since last summer, signaling that the greater the number of home builders are view conditions as good versus poor. And looking at our February existing home sales report that came out this week, the existing home sales surprised to the upside in February, beating even the most optimistic forecast of any economics group surveyed by Bloomberg. Notably, February's gain was the biggest in a year and comes on the heels of a healthy increase in January as well. It looks like sales activity has finally bottomed and is beginning to recover after 2 years of declines. So looking at the details, two of the most significant headwinds for the housing market seem to be abating. First, recent optimism around inflation and rate cuts from the Federal Reserve has led to a rapid decline in interest rates across the board. For example, though 30-year mortgage rates remain around 7%, they are down since peaking above 8% at the end of October. And that said, affordability is still a big concern for buyers. So if you assume a 20% down payment, The rise in mortgage rates since the Federal Reserve began its current tightening cycle in March of 22, it amounts to about a 31% increase in the monthly payments on a new 30-year mortgage for the median's existing home. Eventually, the housing market can adapt to these increases, but continued volatility in financing costs is going to cause some indigestion. The other major headwind for sales has been many existing homeowners are reluctant to sell due to a mortgage lock-in phenomenon after buying or refinancing at much lower rates before 2022. This continues to limit the future existing sales and inventories. However, there are signs of progress with inventories rising 10.3% in the last year. That said, the month's supply of homes, which is how long it would take to sell existing inventory at the current very slow sales pace, was 2.9 in February, which is well below the benchmark of 5 that the National Association of Realtors uses to denote a normal market. A tight inventory of existing homes means that while the pace of sales looks like 2008, we aren't seeing that translate to a big decline in prices. In fact, home prices appear to begin to be rising again, although modestly. With the median price of an existing home up 5.7% from a year ago. So putting this together, we expect a modest recovery in sales in 24. But in manufacturing news, the Philadelphia Fed Index, it's a measure of factory sentiment in that region, declined to plus 3.2 in March from plus 5.2 in February. And finally, on the employment front, initial claims for jobless declined 2,000 last week to 210,000, and continuing claims rose by 4,000 to 1.807 million. And these figures suggest that we have continued job growth for the month of February. This is Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. We'll be back shortly.
We don't have the usual traffic jams that they have in the big city, but sometimes things happen to snarl everything up. Depend on KGMI to keep you cruising to your destination with KGMI Traffic Alerts. We'll tell you where the trouble spots are. And if you see problems on the road, give us a call at 360-676-5464 so we can spread the word. KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com.
Every day, KGMI brings you the latest news and information. And we also give you a chance to express your opinion on a major news story of the day.
Go to MyBellinghamNow.com anytime and take part in our daily news poll to see what others are thinking and add your voice.
We'll have an update during the KGMI afternoon news, and we'll give you a final tally and a new question each day during the KGMI morning news.
Be part of the conversation with the KGMI daily news poll, another informative and free feature from KGMI and MyBellinghamNow.com.
I have diabetes. I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
I have asthma. I'm at risk, too.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine, a Pfizer vaccine that can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Have you really sat down and taken a good look at how much you're paying for home and auto insurance? I'm Derek Barnes, and by now you might know that my wife Denise and I own D&D Insurance in Ferndale. Over the years, we've seen individuals paying $300, $400, and sometimes $500 a year too much for their home and auto insurance. If we're going to be good stewards of the money provided to us, I think it's prudent we review our insurance and financial needs. Likewise, we've been given families to take care of. And if something untimely were to happen to us, it's good to know that we can still provide for our families even when we're not around. Life insurance gives us that opportunity. Don't put it off for another day. Pick up the phone and start making some wise choices. Call the agents at D&D Insurance. They'll point you in the right direction. 392-8159 or visit us online at dndinsurance.com. We look forward to meeting you.
P&W Perks is helping you feel your best this Thursday at 8 a.m. You can get a $50 gift certificate to Max Hair Studios for just $25 at pnwperks.com. Transform your hair and elevate your style at Max Hair Studios inside the Bellis Fair Mall. Known for its exceptional services, skilled style, commitment to delivering personalized experiences, Max Hair Studios is where excellence meets innovation in hair care. From precision haircuts to vibrant coloring and rejuvenating treatments, they offer a wide range of services to enhance your natural beauty. By using only the best products that nourish and protect your hair, you can count on long-lasting results. Max Hair Studios has received awards and certifications for their outstanding services, reflecting their dedication to excellence. Experience the difference at Max Hair Studios, located in the Kohl's Wing at Bellis Fair Mall. Indulge in self-care with Max Hair Studios and P&W Perks this Thursday at 8 a.m. Get a $50 gift certificate for just $25, only at pnwperks.com.
Whatcom County and Northwest Washington offer endless beauty, and our phones make it possible for us to capture it instantly.
And now KGMI is giving you another way to share your incredible pictures with Whatcom Wanderings.
Just go to KGMI.com, look for Whatcom Wanderings, post your photos, and tell us where you took them.
So share your pictures of our area's incredible beauty and complexity with Whatcom Wanderings at KGMI.com.
I had an important job, and it wasn't just a job, it was keeping my brothers and sisters safe. And coming back, it felt like kind of thrown away. If it hadn't been for Wounded Warrior Project, I honestly don't know if I would be here. It was like, I got my family back again. We all felt the connection, like that brother and sisterhood.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Donna by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
Harness the power of the sun, reduce your carbon footprint, and save on your energy bills. Explore the advantages of going solar with West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue, Sunday morning. You know, as we started the show today, we talked about the Fed meeting this week. We're going to give an update on the report of their meeting. And basically, there was zero chance that the Fed was going to cut rates. Instead, it was all about the meeting, the dot plot, the press conference, what it meant for the timing and the pace of rate cuts in the months ahead. So starting with their statement, there was only one change from January, and it was a minor one. And while prior language stated the job gains had moderated since early last year but remained strong, the statement removed language concerning moderation and simply stated that job gains have remained strong. That, along with a slight adjustment lowered to the unemployment rate in forecast of 24, suggests that a stronger than anticipated job market has weakened the Fed confidence that inflation will trend substantially towards 2%. Their survey of economic projections provided more clarity. Forecasts for real inflation-adjusted GDP growth in 24 rose to 2.1% from 1.4% in December. And while that outlook for stronger growth, their unemployment rate expectations shifted down to 4% from 4.1%, while core inflation expectations rose to 2.6% from 2.4%. It is worth noting that with unemployment at 3.9%, core inflation at 2.8, that this suggests that the FOMC members see very little movement in either category over the remaining 9 months of this year. And while the combination of faster growth, higher inflation, and a stronger job market didn't shift the Fed's expectation for the equivalent of 325 basis point cuts between now and the year end, the distribution of forecasts shows that only one FOMC participant now expects more than three rate cuts will be appropriate this year. That was down from five at the December meeting, and rate cut expectations for 2025 shifted to three from four. But beyond rate cuts, markets have been wondering when the market will start to taper back the pace of quantitative tightening. During the press conference, Powell wouldn't confirm or deny the process could begin as soon as the next Fed statement on May 1st, but he did say that it would be appropriate to start fairly soon, with plans to gradually cut pace of roll-offs. In other words, May looks to be on the table. We expect the Fed will start cutting rates in June. That said, the Fed should take a cautious approach once the process begins, with primary focus on not cutting rates too aggressively or prematurely, which could reignite the inflation problem like the Fed did on multiple occasions under Chairman Arthur Burns back in the 1970s. The economy is still growing, but we think it falls into a recession before the year is out, and that real GDP growth significantly lags the predictions of the FOMC members. This, in turn, heightens the risk that the Fed makes a more aggressive path on rate cuts in response to economic weakness, bringing the threat of reaccelerating inflation to the forefront in the years ahead. So we need to be really careful what the Fed does at this point in time. They don't cut rates too soon and then all of a sudden have to turn back around and start raising them up again. Well, you know, Biden put out his budget, and we're going to talk a little bit about a couple of charts here that compare the federal budget to your household budget. You know, President Joe Biden's latest budget proposals, the federal government spent trillions more than it's going to take in. Increasingly, the already unsustainable federal debt by $17 trillion over the next 10 years. That's a 50% increase from its current levels, to put it in perspective. But these 13 and 14 figure dollar amounts have little meaning for the ordinary American citizens whose income, spending, and debt are typically in the five to six figure amounts. Translating Biden's budget down to the household level provides a better perspective, although a grim one. His proposal is the government spending $7.3 trillion in 2025. That's going to increase in his budget up to $10.3 trillion in 2034. And that's with the federal debt climbing from $37 trillion to $54 trillion over that same 10-year period of time, even after accounting for $1.4 trillion in tax increases on the wealthy Americans and the big corporations that has been proposed. Again, he's got the deficit increasing over that period of time from $37 trillion to $54 trillion, and that is after a $1.4 trillion increase that he's proposed as far as taxes. So let's compare the federal budget, the government budget, to typical household budget. And 2023, the median family income in the United States is projected to be about $77,750, or just short of $78,000. That's the median family income. But if the family spent money like the federal government, it would spend $107,403. That's $107,403 if we spent it, and we could run up deficits like the federal government does. That means that you'd be putting $29,653 on your credit cards. Pretty good bite there. Okay, let's say that the ordinary household adopted President Biden's budget. Well, that means that in 2024, we would see that spending go from that $75,000-$73,000 number over the next 10 years to about $151,000. That's income. So the income is $77,000, would go to about $151,000, would about double. But the federal budget would go, deficit would go, spending would go from a little over $100,000 per household up to over $180,000. And basically the debt, individual debt, right now the family debt is projected to be about $600,000 per household. That would be for a family of four. Well, by 2034, your share of the federal debt would run up to almost $954,000 per household. Think about that, $954,000. That's far more than the average house, and that's over the next 10 years. You know, in that trajectory, if this is bleak, it's unsustainable family budget, could actually turn out to be worse. The president's budget assumes that tax revenues are going to increase by 70% over the next decade. For the median household, that would mean a big jump from that $77,000 of current income, or $78,000, to $151,000 by 2034. And over the past three decades, household incomes have averaged half that growth at 35%. But if household incomes were to rise less than projected, household debt would climb even higher. That same calculus applies to the federal government. So if their spending is going to go up faster than what they want, the debt's going to go up higher. And while the federal government has a greater ability than households to increase its income in the short run, Congress can pass laws to take more money from taxpayers. Higher taxes lead to a smaller economy, which ultimately makes maintaining higher government revenues even more difficult and damaging to the average American's income and their well-being. It is important to note that Biden's budget does nothing to address the depletion of Social Security's trust fund, not one word in there, which is going to result in 23% cut in benefits. We talked about that on yesterday's show, or a loss of $5,300 for the average retiree for all Social Security recipients beginning in 2033. Translated to the typical household budget, that's like draining all retirement savings accounts on top of accumulating $348,000 in new debt while relying on one's children to provide for oneself in retirement. And then without including any specific Social Security proposals, Biden's budget messaging said that he is committed to working with Congress to project and strengthen Social Security by asking for the highest income Americans to pay their fair share. That fair share is included in that $1.some trillion I talked about. The problem with that commitment is that one Social Security proposal was designed to align with Biden's promises, which is a Social Security 2100, a sacred trust act, relies on budget gimmicks, including 75 years of tax increases, but only 10 years of benefit increases. If the benefit increase in that proposal were made permanent, it would actually hasten Social Security's insolvency by 2 years and increase its shortfalls by 21%. The only current proposal that would make Social Security solvent, or at least before accounting for negative economic impacts, would expand the program and hike taxes by $34 trillion over the next 75 years. That plan, the Social Security Expansion Act, includes a new 16.2% tax on small business owners and top federal tax rates of 51.8% on wages, 36.2% on long-term capital gains and dividends. That's almost double on everything. So 36.2% on capital gains and dividends, up from the current 40.2% top rates on income and 23.8% on dividends and capital gains. You combine this with state taxes, the top rates would equal 66.6% on wages, 51% on long-term capital gains and dividends. Those tax rates do not include tax hikes on the wealthy and high earners that Biden has proposed in his budget. So let's put it simple. It is impossible to pay for current spending, and even less so, Biden's proposed spending increases by taxing the rich. If the president and or any lawmaker wants to relate to and help ordinary Americans, he should start by adhering to the same budget limitations that face ordinary Americans. No responsible individual or family would consistently spend more than they earn, nor would they spend more money in ways that prioritize their own consumption over the future well-being of their children and their grandchildren. A responsible federal budget would address the major drivers in our federal debt by proposing common sense reforms to major entitlements like Social Security and Medicare, and by reorienting federal spending to only inherently federal government purposes. And just like a responsible household budget helps families pursue their goals, a responsible federal budget would help expand opportunities and increase the well-being of younger and future generations. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. We'll be back shortly. Thank you for listening. And I know sometimes it's tough to listen.
Attention homeowners. This is Brad, CEO from Barron Heating, AC Electrical and Plumbing. Our family has proudly served this community for over 50 years. I can assure you, we're more than just a business. We're a family you can rely on. As winter winds down, we're all looking forward to sunnier, warmer days. However, recent reports suggest our mild winter will lead to record high temperatures in the summer months ahead. Seasonal prediction models are confident in a transition from El Nino to La Nina in the years to come. So what does this mean for you? Winters will be colder and summers will be hotter. The National Weather Service predicts an up to 70% chance of above normal temps this summer in Washington. With this forecast, it's crucial to start preparing your home for the changing weather conditions. Investing in air conditioning now ensures your family is comfortable and safe. With AC, you can shut your doors and windows, blocking out previous year's heat and wildfire smoke. The good news? Barron has affordable options to add AC. Give us a call today.
Why West Edge Credit Union? Because they're all about the community. Of course I like that West Edge has low interest rates and loan specials. But what I really love is that West Edge partners with local nonprofit and City of Bellingham organizations. Plus they put on events like Community Shred. And they talk to me like I'm a real person, not an account number. West Edge really cares.
Join West Edge Credit Union today. West Edge is federally insured by NCUA. West Edge Credit Union, on the corner of James and Alabama in Bellingham.
Staying connected with your community each Saturday at noon with KGMI's Community Connection as local business leaders share their expert advice. Sponsored by
Lighthouse Mission Ministries, Dewey Griffin Subaru, Feller Heating and Air Conditioning, Contact Counseling, and Guided Solutions.
Community Connection, Saturdays at noon on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham, and streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
Because there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back to Wolf Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning. I'm going to hit the Mariners tickets available again real quick. Again, next Saturday, that is the 30th, Saturday night, 6:40 p.m., Boston tickets. I also have tickets for the 3rd of April against Cleveland. That's a daytime game at 1:10. If you're interested, four tickets and a parking pass, give me a call, 360-733-1200. Also, you can call me if you got questions. Okay, we're seeing that more and more Americans abroad are eager to drop their citizenship on lowered fees. We have a lot of so-called accidental Americans tied to reporting assets to the IRS that are preparing to renounce their U.S. citizenship as the U.S. State Department of State gets ready to significantly cut the filing fee. Passed in 2010 to crack down on tax evasion, the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, or FATCA, has proposed a number of headaches on American citizens living outside the country. It requires foreign banks to report assets of U.S. account holders to the IRS. And in some cases, it's been lenders to refuse accounts and services to anyone with U.S. citizenship to avoid fees for noncompliance. But facing these financial issues, accidental Americans, these citizens really have little connection to the U.S. other than having an American parent or happening to have been born here, have complained for years that the $2,350 fee is a deterrent from renouncing their citizenship. Now, in the face of a lawsuit, the State Department has proposed lowering the price to $450 this year. So basically ditching citizenship. There's many people ready to drop their U.S. citizenship. Under FATCA, foreign banks have to report a U.S. tax identification number for every U.S. client. The U.S. is one of only three countries in the world, one of the others being North Korea, that taxes based on citizenship and not residency. A recent survey from Greenbank, which provides tax services to Americans living abroad, found that nearly 33% of U.S. expats plan to renounce their citizenship or are seriously considering it, with the burden of U.S. filing U.S. taxes listed as a top complaint. Still, renouncing their citizenship is a drastic measure, and only a sliver of the millions of U.S. Americans living abroad are going to take that step. But at least 3,260 people renounced their U.S. citizenship last year, and 3,840 did it in 2022. That is according to data from the IRS's Federal Register. We have run into this problem with people doing IRA rollovers, especially at the end of the year. And so we're going to take a look, especially if you did one right at the end of last year. We'll pass that 60-day window, but the same thing would apply if you did it at the end of this year. So basically, there's four facts that you need to know if you're going to take a year-end rollover that you need to do to avoid tax headaches. And the rules for rolling over IRA distributions, they are complicated. They can become especially challenging at the end of the calendar year. If you're taking distribution from your IRA at the end of the year, considering rolling it over, but you aren't going to do it until the next year, there are four facts that you want to know. Surprisingly, number one, sometimes IRA owners have doubts as to whether a distribution taken in one calendar year can even be rolled over in the next. But there is no problem. Nothing prevents you from taking an IRA distribution in December and rolling it over in January the following year, as long as you follow the same rules that apply. You want to be especially careful with that 60-day rollover window during the busy time of the year and make sure that you do it within that 60 days. Number two, you may wonder how to handle a distribution from your IRA in 2023 that you can roll over in your 24 or 24 return, or if you take it in 24 and handle it on your 25 return. You do not report the transaction on your 23 or 24 return. You wait for the following year. So here's how it works. The IRA custodian will report the distribution from your IRA in the year that you take it using Form 1099-R. The rollover will be reported by the IRA custodian that receives it on Form 5498 the following year. So you're going to report the distribution, the rollover on your 23 tax return, but the receiving custodian won't report it until a year later. Number three, you need to be careful not to fall on a common misunderstanding of the one rollover per year. This rule says that you may roll over one distribution from all of your IRAs in 1 year period. The one rollover rule does not apply on a calendar year basis. It begins on the date that you receive the distribution that you later roll over. A new calendar year does not mean that you have a clean slate. If you take an IRA distribution on December 15th and you roll it over in January the following year, you cannot roll over another IRA distribution until December 16th of the year that you roll over that first contribution. So you can only have one indirect, handle the money yourself, rollover per year. And number four, if you're taking required minimum distributions or RMDs, there's an important rule to remember. If you take a distribution in 2023 or say this year, 24, you complete those rollovers in 25, you must include the amount rolled over in your December 31st fair market value when you calculate your RMDs for the year. This rule prevents IRA owners from avoiding RMDs by having an IRA balance of zero on December 31st. You cannot escape your RMD by emptying out your IRA in December and then rolling over the new funds in January. So you have to take the value that would include that amount that you roll over and calculate your required minimum distribution based on that full amount. You need to keep in mind if you're establishing a new IRA with your rollover in 24, your IRA custodian will not be reporting your RMD for you. If you're rolling over an existing IRA, the RMD amount in the IRA custodian reports will be less than the actual RMD. This is because the IRA custodian reports RMD information to IRA owners based on December 31st of the prior year balance with no adjustments. So you have to make that adjustment yourself. So again, it's really important that you keep track of the timing of when you take a distribution, when that shows up, and make sure that you don't try to play some games, because we've had people try to do that occasionally. Well, we're seeing that the U.S. economy is scoring a big win from the bear market in natural gas. We've had a dramatic collapse in U.S. gas prices this year. It's quietly helping to boost the nation's economy. It's slashing some energy costs, even as prices of other necessities continue to rise. Natural gas doesn't grab the attention quite like crude oil. It's a behind-the-scenes fuel that permeates the economy, used to heat homes, generate electricity, run factories, and make fertilizer. When gas futures surged in 21 and 22, the ripple effects hit at consumers and manufacturers alike. Now that prices have plummeted to their lowest in 4 years, there is relief that's becoming apparent. The clearest impact on costs so far is for American households that use gas to heat their homes. Consumer gas bills fell about 9% in February compared with a year earlier. The latest consumer price index data shows they help cap nearly a year of steady declines. The price in gas underscores the waning impact of energy is having on wider cost of living in the U.S. In June of 22, the sector was contributing about one quarter of overall inflation. Now it's dropped to essentially zero, according to CPI data. And energy makes up a significant part of our household budget. it makes it up for a much larger portion of those who are less economically advantaged. And while the clearest benefit of the price drop is so far has come in utility bills, the decline is poised to start filtering through to other sectors of the economy. Companies often hedge their significant price movements in natural gas. Those who are locked in costs at higher levels are going to continue to reap rewards as those bets unwind and businesses later take advantage of the current lows. Natural gas is used to make ammonia, nitrogen fertilizers, making it a key to global food production. Fertilizer maker CF Industry Holdings said in February earnings call that while the company didn't take full advantage of recent declines in prices due to hedging, it is getting benefits from the drop in daily cash rates. Executives of Century Aluminum Company recently called attractive levels for its Midwest power prices, driven by lower natural gas costs. Road Builder Construction Partners, Inc. has pointed to the slight tailwind in lower gas prices. But the rout in natural gas, with futures in New York falling under $2 per million billion units last month, is a stark contrast from 2 years ago, when the commodity was at the center of an energy and economic crisis as prices skyrocketed to a 14-year high, rising above $9. The surge was exacerbated by Russia's invasion in Ukraine. As Europe weaned itself off natural gas, or off Russian gas, it started a global scramble for supplies. Futures have already been moving higher in months leading up to the invasion after years of underinvestment in that sector left the market with historically low supplies. And the high prices helped cure the supply problem. U.S. production has soared to a record. This has come simultaneously with an unusually mild winter, dampening demand for fuel at heat homes. Meanwhile, European gas prices have eased significantly from their peak in the energy crisis, with mild weather and still sluggish demand contributing to their slide. Still, prices remain well above pre-crisis levels as volatility has become more common. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here on KGMI. Got a question for us? Give us a call. Don't forget our live show on Saturdays at 11. Have a great week.
Voiced on the show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision.